Economic Development Committee meeting for Tuesday, January 5th, 2016. Alderman Funkhauser, Alderman Killian, Alderman Coke, Alderman Plissmore, present. City staff. Did you sign in, sir?
I did.
Okay. Citizens' comments? You have comments, or are you regarding an item?
No, I'm on an item on Caledonia.
Okay. Minutes for correction or approval from December 1st, 2015.
They were fine with me.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, new business. Item 1, EDC 2016-01, building permit report for November 2015.
Okay, month of November, we added five building center programs. No single-family detached homes, and 10 commercial permits. The majority of those were all remodels for commercial spaces and whatnot. And I think the majority of the build programs we issued were for two were in Blackberry Woods, and the rest of them were for Wendett Ridge, I believe, at that point in time. There's 25 miscellaneous permits also. That's about it. So it looks like we're having a pretty good year this year, and I think everyone's going to be happy with their end results.
Any questions? Okay, item number 2, EDC 2016-02, building inspection report for November 2015.
We did 153 inspections. They kind of slowed down a little bit from the month before, but still up more than normal because of our mild weather. The vast majority of them were for the build incentive program homes that are being built.
Any questions?
No, sir.
Okay. Item 3, EDC 2016-03, property maintenance report for November 2015.
Okay, in November, we heard multiple cases here, and the vast majority of the ones were dismissed, besides the motor vehicles on Sumerick Drive and the Canyon Trail. Those were vehicles that had just been sitting there disabled. They're not plated, not stickered, flat tires. Since then, one of these vehicles is gone. The other one is still present, so they've been sent another warning letter, waiting for that 10-day period to be up, and then we'll reissue. 206 Eustis came back up again for seven different cases. They were found liable on all of them. The weeds and grass was the most sizable fine, because that's a daily fine. Person-wise, the other ones are just a minimum, maximum hearing officer's discretion as to how he wanted to handle the fine structure. So several of those tickets will be reissued. We were working out the bugs of the new state law and stuff like that before we go back to the downtown and handle these citations. But most of those, besides the weeds and grass, which isn't in evidence right now because of the weather, the rest of it is still there. The prohibited signs are there, but they're not on the ground, so now they're junk, trash, and debris instead of signs. So we're still monitoring the situation and taking steps to try to remedy it.
Okay. Move on. So who's not here, right?
I've got a report.
Okay. Item number 4, EDC 2016-04, Economic Development Update.
Hello, I'm Lynn's assistant for the week. She's out of the office this week, obviously. The YEDC actually closed out last week. Per the bylaws of the organization, all of the funds that were remaining in the bank account were sent to the city. So that was about $3,000, which is a good thing. So that offsets our cost a little bit going forward. Lynn's first invoice also came in. She did work 40 hours more than expected in December alone, but she's on vacation this week, and she's got a couple more vacations planned at the end of the month and next month. So she's planning on offsetting that in the coming months just with vacations. So she didn't bill us for those extra hours. She is contacting the developers of Kendall Marketplace and Kendall Crossing to see if they're going to be in attendance at the Recon ICSC conference in Las Vegas at the end of May. She said that if they're going to be present, and they have not been in the past, but she thinks with the change in property owners that they probably will be this year, that it would be beneficial for her to go and then for us to send city representatives to it too.
So, and where is it?
Las Vegas.
Yeah,
okay, I kind of figured we probably wouldn't have trouble recruiting some people to go. Through her professional organizations, she actually gets discounted rates for us to go, and she's already mentioned that if we do end up going, that she can cover hotel through points that she had saved up, basically through the YEDC. So it should be actually a pretty minimal cost.
I'll pay for my own way. I don't expect city to pay for it, but I'll go.
Well, it's very useful to have somebody there to sit in the meetings with the developer and the potential tenants to talk about what we're doing. So
whatever I need to do for the city.
Yeah, maybe we can send out multiple teams of employees to the different meetings. So anyway, so that's in the works.
So when do you need information on that, or is that?
I would say the next week or two. Okay. So, when
is that?
It's the end of May. So depending on if they're going to be there or not, and she lets us go, then I'll put out the feeler for volunteers, and then go from there. Based on the committee's reaction to downtown development at last meeting, we did meet with Rick Tolson from Imperial Investments and Mike Mann from Boomba and Imperial Investments to go over his future plans for his downtown properties. He's very focused on Boomba right now. He has not really, you know, pulled up any stakes. He's just kind of in a holding pattern right now for future development. So he's trying to focus on Barley Fork and the Vault Gym and a couple of his other properties there, either finding tenants or, you know, cleaning them up so that they're ready to go basically when the weather breaks.
So he is open to tenants?
Yeah, he has met with people and nothing has worked out.
Okay.
So.
Real quick, you mentioned Boomba.
Mm-hmm.
They're still secure there. They're not pulling up from there.
They are not, no. They've shifted around some operations, but they are still above the employment requirement, and they're just basically shifting the focus of the facility solely to be warehouse, so they're taking production elsewhere, which is actually good because then they're expanding, and through their different supply chains, they're actually increasing their capacity and getting their product quicker, which is nice.
So we'll still have Boomba here, but as
a
distribution and storage person.
Production, distribution, and storage. So they're consolidating some supply chain issues. Lynn is working with a new business that is looking to construct an entirely new commercial building on the south side of town. They're in the process of purchasing now, so they can't talk about where exactly it is or what it is, but they are looking to fast-track an opening and get the building up and constructed this year and have it be open by the end of fall. So that's good news. And then she's also been working with Justine Brummel on the community center project, the Sports Dome, at a new location, obviously. And so more information will be forthcoming as that project moves along.
Top of the river or north of the river?
Tough to say.
So the rumors about it being behind the Jewel off of Orchard Road there in Oswego is
it's going to be right next to the four-story
Yeah, because I heard people told me they heard us going behind that Jewel.
I know that was an option. I'm not sure if that's been formally ruled out or if that's still in the running. So we'll see. And that's all I had.
That's good news. Mm-hmm. Good to hear. I'm excited.
Maybe a note to her. How do we get an update for countryside there area, because you know what, a year ago was when we put the signs up, right? We gave them the signs they wanted and stuff.
Yep.
So we should be, I thought they had people lined up at the point in time then to come in and...
They've had people floating around.
They had people lined up. I think people were saying there's no signage, and that was their big complaint.
And also 47 was going on the construction.
Right.
And
yeah.
They wanted.
Well, I'm just wondering where we're at now.
I don't think anybody was lined up saying as soon as the sign goes up, we're coming
in.
Correct.
But
okay.
I think it was more of a to induce future.
They've been talking to people. Nothing has landed yet. And then that would be the other major developer potentially going to the ICSC show.
Okay.
So that would be good news for us to get there because... Frankly, the sooner somebody gets in there is a financial benefit to us because of the TIF district.
Yes.
So.
And the theater's doing well, it looks like? I mean.
Yeah, seems like it. I went
over break, and it was packed.
That's because of Star Wars.
Right, that's... Mm-hmm.
On a non-Star Wars weekend, it still seems to be doing pretty well.
I talked to one of the owners over there about an issue they have with the handicap door not working properly. A resident called and complained about it, so I went over and talked to him. The owner happened to be there, and... He said that they're estimating they have a 73% of the market share for our area.
Wow.
So, and they're considering that area Orchard Road corridor all the way down through Sandwich.
Did you know that Kendall 10 now is going to start serving liquor?
Yes, I had heard that.
Yeah, heard that.
Once they make their expansion, once they do that.
I don't like that.
You don't like it, the concept, or you don't like it because it's competitive disadvantage? It's
competitive disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think their prices are going to be exponentially higher. My understanding is that the liquor licensing and the insurance required to do that is astronomical. The Hollywood Palms that does that up there, that is sometimes it's cost prohibitive. They actually get some of the bigger movies for them. Mm-hmm. Friend of my brother's.
If they have to add on top of the cost of the movie, they got to add up.
So you're talking $40 a ticket, and then you have to buy your, you know, alcohol. So like, for like Star Wars, that it's.
I paid $11 this weekend for Star Wars. I about had a heart attack. $11 for a movie ticket.
Here?
No, it was in Ohio.
Yeah, I was going to say, because ours is very reasonable.
Yeah, I think I paid $7, $8 or something. That was
movie theater, so reasonable.
Well, I went matinee, I went 4 o'clock.
It was 5:30. It wasn't too late.
But I've heard other people, though, that they're really happy with it. They probably should have had it a long time ago, they said. So.
Yeah, no, people have been pretty happy with it.
Okay.
Can I ask one?
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with the movie theater, but I heard you talking about those signs in Countryside. What are those?
Oh, those are for the locate for Comet.
Because the way it reads is that it says they're putting in a...
Smart grid.
Smart grid.
They are... putting in the underground infrastructure to be able to accommodate a smart grid. The smart grid, like the smart meters, will be rolled out to us probably in the next year or two.
So is that going to be all, like, talked about with our road projects that's going in there so it doesn't disrupt any of that?
I believe they've met with Brad on EI about that, and I think they've established how far they have to be outside. Because I don't think we know exactly where everything's going, but I think they have parameters, and they're outside that parameter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, most of it's side yard and rear yard
type
stuff.
Sorry, I know it was off the topic, but I was wondering.
Okay, item number 5, new business. EDC 2016-05, Caledonia Proposed Development Agreement.
Okay. For those who weren't here, in November 2004, the city approved a PUD agreement for development is about 84 acres, and at that time it was approved with a master plan that had 206 lots to be developed in three phases. So you had phase one, which would have 73 lots, phase two, 72 lots, and phase three, which would have 61 lots. So up until now, only units one and two have been final platted, so there's 145 lots out there. The owner of the development has changed hands, so we have three successor owners. Zemia LLC owns a portion. They own 68 of the vacant parcels. We have Romans Development Holdings, which owns 28. You have individual homeowners that own the balance of those 145. And then phase three, which is just one single lot, is owned by a trust. The owners have contacted the city and asked for a restatement and clarification of the PUD because there were some items that needed clarification, one being the park's contribution. In the original annexation PUD agreement, it was anticipated that a lump sum would be paid to the city of about $158,000. And then through correspondences back and forth through the city administrator at the time, it was agreed to do it on built per building permit basis, but it was never collected because it was never codified in the PUD agreement. So the existing homes out there are never paid towards that park land fee. There were some other items that the agreement, that we came to an agreement with the developer, creation of a backup SSA, the acknowledgement that each unit would have to pay $2,000 toward the Robbery Interceptor, and then there's a breakdown of what those fees would be for each of the successor owners. And then the city would agree to early acceptance of the roadway, even though 70% of the homes have not been built around the roadway system. That the successor owner Zemia would agree to pay, would agree to have the final items of the punch list completed, including streetlights installed, and that all parkway trees and sidewalk improvements would be done on a per permit basis, as we've done with other developments. There also is a request for signage because they do want to start marketing the lots so that the lots can be built upon, which is a good thing. And staff prepared example summary of what the fee schedule will look like now compared to where it was under the PUD and what we have agreed upon. What you will notice is that the parks land cash, it's in the staff memo, it's $1,090 per unit. Well, there was discussion back and forth. That was based upon if we only charge the existing 145 lots, that were platted. Once we got the third owner of phase three to agree to this agreement, we were able to lower that rate to $1,006.68 because it'll be spread out over the remaining units that would be developed and subdivided in unit three. So the petitioner's here to talk about their plans for the lots, and I'm here to answer any questions that you have.
Do you remember what the land cash was? Amount was in them days, because it was...
Oh, for this
one? I don't think this was before it got really high.
Yeah, from this one, it was...
Well, the footnote is it's based on land cash of 101 an acre.
No. That's what if it were to be...
Today.
It was a 73.5.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. I didn't realize it was that high. I thought it may have still been done around 43.
Yeah.
A large part of it was paid by a 5-acre land cash contribution, mm-hmm. which was paid, so that's why the fee's a little lower.
Okay.
Just a lot of it's already paid through land cash.
Right.
By the way, I'm Rich Gerard. I'm representing the owners, actually all of them, I guess, mm-hmm. that remain mm-hmm. of the own the properties themselves. So, I mean, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but you just did an excellent summary of the whole situation. I mean, basically what's happened is, we stuck with this the whole time. We didn't walk. We've finished all the final improvements. We did all the punch lists. The only last thing remaining is ComEd has to run some lines for streetlights. The streetlights are in, and we've been working 6 months with ComEd, and they're now telling us that they're going to start January 11th. But that's the last item. So all the punch list was done. All the improvements were completed for Caledonia. We've conveyed all the open spaces to the Homeowners Association, and then there's going to be a backup SSA put in place. So a lot of this is cleanup, and part of it is the fact that because it's been going on so long, the annexation agreements are expiring, and basically we've all agreed to clean it up and just put it back in place and continue it in, for another period until the project's complete. So we're really not changing much of anything. We're just clarifying it and getting it in writing so that everybody will know. And that's really it. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have, but it just really set it off.
This will cover all three units, 1, 2, and 3.
Correct.
Three, it's not planned, but I believe 3 is the northeast.
Yeah, 3 is highlighted in yellow.
The yellow.
Correct.
So that's
everything in yellow.
Mass graded, but not final platted.
Correct.
Makes sense. Have we taken title to the land donation?
Of the 5 acres?
Yes.
Yes, it's been deeded over.
I believe it has. We'll double check. I mean, we would convey it if we haven't, but I think we did convey it.
And that's the parcel on the east, the north part of the easternmost part of the red outline, correct?
Oh, yes.
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 That's all that's there. The other two parcels are stormwater for the commercial, or the industrial, commercial, and the residential, mm-hmm. the regional stormwater facility. Bar, you had mentioned beforehand when we were talking about the SSA that this will be something that will be for the new, as the homes are built, it's going to be for those. It's not going to be for the existing homes that are out there. We're not going to pursue that.
Most likely. That's the one thing that we need to figure out between now and next week is we don't believe that we could force the existing homeowners into the SSA to pay for improvements really that would benefit them if the Homeowners Association ever goes defunct and then we start maintaining the common areas. So it may just have to be that the 156 lots are the only lots that have the SSA on them, and then if for some reason the Homeowners Association goes defunct, then 156 lots are paying for
the improvements. To clarify a little bit, the SSA we're talking about is not like some of the other subdivisions.
It's a backup.
It would only take in place if the Homeowners Association itself did not do the improvements that it's legally obligated to do.
Right.
And it's in place, and we're starting the assessments on that property. And so there really should be never any reason that would ever happen. But if it did, then it's the backup SSA, and it is now becoming standard to put those in place. But you may be able to do it anyway. The SSAs have a different kind of process where somebody has to actually object to it if they don't want to go into it. So that's something your legal department will look at, but it may well be, and even if we want to do it a different way, we wanted to vote, we have enough votes to bring the whole subdivision in between us, you know, the
because of all the lots we have left. And it's really an advantage to everybody. I mean, it's not a burden to the other homeowners. It's an advantage to make sure that we have very, very little common area there, and that is basically the detention areas. And there are small detention areas because part of it was part of a common, different area. So I would think of something that would be to everybody's advantage to make sure that they're taken care of in the monuments in the front. So, but it shouldn't be a major issue one way or the other.
We have two subdivisions, I believe, that we had. They went defunct, and the city took over with the backup. That was a Sunflower and Fox Hill, right?
Correct.
So we do it in that case. We is the SSA formed now currently?
No.
We would have.
Oh, you mean the HOA?
I'm sorry, the HOA.
Yes.
Okay.
It is, and we have been paying all the expenses, and starting this month, we're starting the formal process of everybody paying into the SSA. But I mean sorry, HOA, the homeowner association.
Yeah.
But it is in existence, but we've just been funding it. Mm. Because there really isn't that much to do. Right. You know what I mean?
Regarding the early acceptance, mm-hmm. with Unit 3 not being constructed yet, what are our safeguards that we have for that build out that the entry drive? I would assume that the construction traffic would come up Cornelius primarily. I mean, not to say that it would have to, but if it did come in off of Boomba, what type of securities would we have? I would prefer it to come off of Cornelius into the small entry drive to do that, so it's not on the local streets within the neighborhood as much. But is there something that we could put in place to, if that road is damaged, that entry, if we make them come in that way, that we can protect ourselves and have them repair that?
Well, as part of the Unit 3 build-out process, we would be monitoring, you know, the surrounding area for just general damage. So if the engineers had noticed something on a punch list inspection out there, then we would, you know, attempt to get that off-site issue fixed.
Okay.
But there really is not much of a guarantee. Like, you can't put security up for it because it's off-site, and it's a risk really that you take when you do the early acceptance, which is why it's it's drafted so that we are really not supposed to be accepting it.
Right. In the other ones we've done the early acceptance, I mean, we have the one on the south side, we did early acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
There's one unit in, one unit not in, so right. We're going to go through the same thing on the collector road. This one, it's going to come in right off of the main entrance, or it's going to come through the industrial corridor.
Yeah.
Either way, I just look and see if there was something. But as long as they're going to look at it and potentially punch list it and hopefully remedy it if there are any problems, that's good.
And we also require $5,000 street cleaning, so if there's any, you know, debris or anything left behind, cracks, that would cover that.
The property at the southwest corner of Boomba and Shadowwood is still registered under Zemia, so we would look to get that transferred as part of this, according to the county.
I think we did it this week.
Oh, okay. Then that's why it doesn't show up.
Right. Yeah, it takes a while through the Ken Concord's office. But if we didn't, we certainly will. We wanted to, but
I believe
we
did this week, yeah.
I guess the concern I have is the early acceptance of the roads. And because it's not just phase three, but I mean, if we take all the roads, there's still a lot of lots available in the other phases that are going to have a good amount of construction traffic going in and out of those slots, which is good, because then that means they're building houses, which is what we want. But then the roads that are now ours are being ripped up. So that's something to consider. And then, even though it's not technically a city issue, because it's a dormant SSA, so it's not really our concern unless we have to activate it and it's going to be funded by whatever. I think you if you don't do it uniformly, you're opening the subdivision up for an all-out civil war, which frankly the city won't be involved in from a legal perspective, but you know we're the ones who are going to get the calls and the heat, because you know my neighbor on my right, my neighbor on my left don't have to pay into the SSA, but I do. How is this fair? It's not fair. But then on the other side, you know, you have homeowners that don't have an SSA and you can't shove that down their throats.
Right.
I don't know. That has potential. I'm concerned because it has a potential just to get ugly, not from the city's liability because we have no liability, just from our residents' point of view that I'm concerned is to how that's going to affect the residents of that subdivision if it's not uniform.
Really, the only way to force them to do it is to go to court.
Well, that's the thing. I don't want to force them to do it. But I also acknowledge that half the people not paying is a recipe for disaster down the road.
Just so you know about the street issues, is we do enforce that. We don't let them unload their heavy equipment, their excavators, whatever else, on the street. And if I see them doing that, we do tell them. We tell all the developers and builders right away. If we come out for final inspection when your house is done, if your curb's beat up, the street's tore up from your escalator, we're not going to pass you because that's damage that you did and it's got to be fixed. It's kind of like when engineers do their final thing. We have our engineering final, and we do enforce that.
Okay.
So that's what it's common knowledge to all the developers in town, that if you're going to load an escalator, you back the truck up over the curb and it pulls off on your property, does its work, and you have to plan for it, and you load it back up that way. Especially in all like Heartland and stuff like that, because that was when the first week I was here, me and Greg Marker talked about that, and that was the first thing he wanted to make sure. I mean, even just they're doing construction work, they can't tear the street up. That's our property, and we have to maintain it. So,
okay. Yeah, like I said, I overall support it. I mean, I want them to come in. I want them to develop. I want them to advertise. I want them to get people to build into those slots. I think it'd be great. But those are the two points where I think answering some of my questions about the streets, I feel a little bit better. But the SSA, I know we don't have any heat in our liability, but that could cause a problem to the homeowners down the road. Because certain homes will be more marketable than others. You know, you go buy a house in that subdivision, and there's two of the same models. Which one are you going to buy? The one with the SSA or the one without the SSA?
Yeah. Yeah, but once they start actually paying in the HOA that they have now, when these guys are funding it now, but at least once they start paying into it,
They're all in the HOA.
Right.
So they're all paying in the HOA.
Right now, just to understand the scope of it.
No, they won't.
The total assessment by a homeowner when it's built out will probably be less than $150 a year. I mean, there is hardly anything
for the HOA.
Maintain. Yeah.
Right.
So the SSA, the backup, they don't do public improvements anywhere. They only do the detention areas. So, I mean, it would be hardly anything.
Yeah, but those detention areas can cause...
Down the road, it can be a big chunk.
What they're supposed to do over time is reserve it in the HOA. You know, so... But I understand what you're saying. I mean, if you had to rebuild one for some reason or something. But, once again, these aren't even big detention areas in the subdivision. They're very small in two corners. That it's really not much involved in it. And that's because there's a regional detention area that's not related to this or supported.
Diane? No questions? Chris?
I'm good.
All right. What action do you need, Bart?
Our recommendation for approval, this, because it is a restatement and clarification, could go forward to the next city council meeting for approval.
Okay, so that's four ayes?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. And is that consent type thing, or?
It could be if you felt that it was warranted.
I'm okay with consent. Yeah. One of the other ones wants to pull it up to talk about it, they can.
Okay. Yeah,
we'll do that. We'll do this well.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for your time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Old business, item number one, EDC 2015-37, commercial/industrial incentive plan.
Okay, so this is just to come back from our last discussion to give you an update of where we are. What I did was I just piggybacked on the last memo and just added a little bit of more information. And essentially, staff feels that... there are a lot of incentives in place, but it's not necessarily going to be beneficial for us to do a blanket program of incentives because each site is different, each need of each developer would be different, and so we're proposing to continue to use the strategy to entice commercial and industrial developments on a case-by-case or site-specific basis. And what we're doing on a case-by-case basis is we'll look at what incentives that we utilize at most communities around utilize, which would be the TIF, which would be any sales tax rebates, even maybe real estate tax rebates that we could use to incentivize each development. And then when it comes to site specific, then we look more what the site would need that we could assist with. Is it water and sewer main capacity? Is there any type of street alignment that we can assist with intersection improvements? And so we felt that that would be a more customized and better approach than doing a blanket program.
And that's kind of what we do now.
I that's guess. Exactly what we do now.
So with this, we're not considering anything new at this point based on the staff recommendation. It's continue with what we have and utilize that.
But what I am recommending, though, is that as we develop more site-specific information for these larger areas that will be identified in the comprehensive plan, that then we could use that site data and create individual marketing materials so that when developers come in, they'll have a site plan with all the information that they would be needing, utility connection information, with their roadway improvements within the next few years, just information that our economic development coordinator can use to give individuals so they know what's going on with the site.
So at what point do we select site-specific incentives? Like, let's say, like you're saying, you know, it depends on the site, we're going to go site by site. I mean, when that information gets disseminated to a prospective buyer and developer, on there are we going to have, you know, this lot, if you go with this lot, you're going to get this, or if you go with that lot, you're going to get that, or?
No, I think it would be more custom to the individual developer. So what the site-specific information would be just data. What's it zoned? Where's the nearest utility connection?
But how does the developer then know that we as a city are open to working with some of these incentives?
Right, let's take the property out by Cornelius and Elmy.
Yeah.
The industrial piece. Let's take that one.
Yeah.
So that's an industrial piece or manufacturing piece limited by the fact that it doesn't have gas.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Someone wants to come in. What are, if they're going to do their due diligence, they're going to know, okay, we have incentive agreements that allow for TIF districts, they allow for certain tax increments. What will they be finding and seeing that tells them in advance of coming into us of what are the incentives that are available to that parcel if they're considering before they come to us, before they look?
Well, that's if you want that information, is that something you would want on the information? I'm getting feedback from you now, so.
And that's what I
don't know what that would be.
Well, I see it's kind of a catch-22 because we want to make it custom to the developer, so we can't say, like kind of I proposed, for this lot, this is what we're doing. But I also want them to know that they're dealing with a city who's open to it. We have some arrows in our quiver, and we're not, you know, we're willing to share them. So how do we get that message across versus just pure data?
Information.
And this is where I'm thinking, if we don't want to take that site and say, okay, on this site, the city's going to offer $500,000 of gas improvements, we're going to offer a tax incentive, we're not going to nail those down. But if we had some type of a document that outlines, obviously we outlined what our basic incentives are right now, but to expand on that, we're willing to consider this or this, you know, what we would be willing to consider helping with infrastructure. These are the things that the city is willing to investigate and study. Something like a cut sheet that could be disseminated that has that kind of information globally for industrial, commercial, at least something that's a little more than
so
just what we have.
Right. So on the flip side, these are types of incentives that the city would be willing to
right. So if you're
consider.
Looking for, and yeah, they might come in and say, hey, we're looking at this parcel, and you might tell them, well, we have, this is what we've talked about, but it wouldn't work on this project, but we have an alternative here. But at least it puts it out there that we are thinking about them. We might not be able to truly say, yes, we can give you this on this property, but at least it throws out some other alternative ideas for people to think about when they're looking at what incentives are do we currently have and what incentives would we consider.
I do like the idea of having written material to hand out that's branded and that, you know, is a point of reference for a developer after they leave a meeting. I will say that as long as we're employing Lynn she is verbally narrating exactly
those types of details to a prospective developer. Specifically. Yeah. And that's where, if it comes to us and we're talking with somebody, they've already been to Lynn, they've already been to Christy.
I hope they have.
They've had those conversations, and they should have good insight. But before they even make the contact with, you know, Christy or Lynn, if they're doing their due diligence and just kind of checking into the municipality, they're going to look and see what's financially what's available to us.
That's true.
And those are the kind of things I want to see on our website that they can do their, if they're going to do the research, they're going to find it, and that's going to give them a reason, more reason to contact us, contact Elena or Christy.
Because the example that you gave is a good example, because that could really blossom once that breaks, you know. And there's all kinds of possibilities, but I don't know how anyone,
break that. I just feel that every deal that has come before the city always has some sort of incentive agreement attached to it. So clearly the developers and the businesses that come know about incentive agreements, and that's the first thing they throw out there.
Well, how did Wrigley work?
Don't you think that they know already that there's potentially incentives?
I think depending on the type of business, the type of developer, and the industry that they're involved in, they do already sort of know what's available. And any developer worth their weight, obviously, is going to try to, you know, get as much money as possible. So that's, you know, inherent incentive is already kind of there, that they're going to try to craft ways basically to get more money out of us. But like with Wrigley, I mean, that was a competitive site selection process where they came to us and said, this was 2 years ago, year and a half ago. I don't even remember now. Mm-hmm. It's getting fuzzy. They said, we're considering doing this here, but you're up against other sites, and we need to know what's available to us. So we had walked an attorney, a general Wrigley developer, a type person, and then somebody from corporate through available incentives, just verbally right there. And they had already actually known about everything except for TIF, because they were not Illinois-specific development experience. They didn't have Illinois-specific development experience. So at that point, we had kind of let them know that that site probably wouldn't work very well for a TIF, but their initial reaction was they didn't want to touch it anyway because it heavily impacted the schools, first and foremost. So I said, you know, they were looking for a couple $1 million, basically, in incentives, and that's where the state stepped in and helped.
But that's my point. They still came and asked for specifically what they could.
Yeah, but that's a major corporation like Wrigley.
Yeah.
I think we're looking at more of the like lower
a,
end.
Like a franchisee like Dairy Queen.
Right, not as sophisticated as Wrigley, that we want them to know that there's options to.
Right. Wrigley is not going to pick a local developer from, you know, Naperville. They're going to pick a high-power developer that works in Chicago, New York, one of their corporate locations that may not have the experience locally. They're going to do their due diligence, but a lot of the locals are going to be doing the research on behalf of a basic landowner, somebody that's going to be doing the investment. But it's going to be in a lower budget. They're not going to know all the questions necessarily to ask, but
yeah,
they have the same obligations. Find the best that they can for their client.
Does anyone here remember the old incentive policy before this one? So
I'm learning all this.
It seems like the pendulum is swinging, because it actually used to walk through every available incentive mechanism, and even had, I mean, it was relatively strict in that it said, like, if you generate one job, we'll give you like $3,000 in real estate tax credits and stuff. So the complaint at the time after we had approved it was that it locked us into too much of a, you know, a narrow incentive option. So maybe it is resurrecting that, and maybe swinging back towards a more descriptive policy that's maybe a little bit more promotional or marketing in nature rather than like
I think it's
a policy document.
More in like you said, marketing.
I think that's, you hit it on the head.
Yeah.
Promotional marketing. And
we're not tying
not
anybody
necessarily
into anything. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We still have people that are able to consult with the potential developers. You know, it takes the action of the council to make those agreements, but they have the ability to know what we are willing to consider, at least. And it's
you
truly
know, like,
promotional.
When
it's
you
marketing.
Run for office, you have a palm card, right? You go door to door and you hand people your palm card. Well, some of us, they had palm cards. And you go to door to door and you hand people
What's
your
palm
card.
It's kind of like a comp
for sure.
And it has points. It doesn't lay down everything you can do.
But it has
ten points.
But
you know, it's the same thing. You're thinking of it as you're campaigning for your city. You're trying to get
right.
these people to pick you.
Right.
A palm card for business that would kind of give them an outline and bullet points of different incentive ideas that we'll be willing to work with them. You know, it's just nothing
well,
real.
Well, why can't we just put something on the website that says we have incentives for your business? You know, your business.
That may be one of the options.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to say what they are, because then I think it would maybe make people. Maybe they would, if we did put stuff on there and then it didn't work out for them, they'll be like, oh yeah, they just lied to us. They just said, we have this. And then they were like, nope, it doesn't going to work for you. I just think it needs to be more general, and like it is now. And we have Lynn that goes out there and she talks to them and tells them, well, this can... The first thing that someone does is when they want, I would think, when they want to have a business is figure out, you know, potentially where they want to have it. And then if there's two or three different places, then they would investigate each place individually to see what's going to be the best fit for their business.
Right, but when they do that...
Exactly. So what wouldn't your first thing to do would be to make a phone call? Who do I talk to?
Yeah, but maybe they don't. Maybe they're doing it online.
Yeah.
Maybe they're doing...
Yeah, there's a lot of that happens.
We don't know that...
I was going to say, I think it happens live.
I will say firsthand.
Yes.
Well, then why don't we just put something in our website that says... You know, that we are, you know, we have incentives.
Right,
I mean,
now our incentive policy is
but
very
you guys,
specific.
We just talked, it's not specific.
Well, but our incentive policy talks about a few different things, and it's broad, but it'd be nice to have something that's more marketing. Right now, it's a ordinance. Our incentive policy is an ordinance. It's cut and dry. It's not pretty. You can hand it to somebody. But do they really want to read that? Not really. It would be nice to have something that's more collateral, more of a pretty picture that says, this is what we are willing to do. And, you know, Alderman Postmo's comment about if you bring in a job and you end up having that employee buy a house here, do we have an incentive? Some kind of language in there that says that we're open to negotiating different types of incentives. You know, not limiting ourselves to just, you know, TIFs and tax rebates, those kind of things, but just... putting it in that we're willing to look at them.
Well, then why don't we
but
do that?
Just something more of a marketing.
Seem
no,
difficult.
It makes sense to me, too.
I mean, it doesn't seem that difficult.
No.
It just seems like let's put it on the website. It doesn't seem like it should be a big production
would
like
it,
us.
Would it be helpful if we also included developments that we've incentivized? So maybe
yes.
an image
a
of...
real brief synopsis of some of those projects.
Yeah, image of, you know, Wrigley and say this was incentivized and this
successful
amount,
ones.
Couple of, yeah.
Why don't...
let's be unsuccessful.
Northside mostly.
People do due diligence. The first thing they do is they Google an address. You know, if you're looking at a piece of property, you drive by, you say it's, you know, 1800 Veterans Park, but you Google it. So if we were to put it on our website, almost like a realtor page, where it has available properties,
available
or, you know, industrial, manufacturing, whatever it is, and put right on there, put a link right under there, give a brief description of the property, just like a realtor's blurb, and then put, for economic incentives, please contact, and have Lynn Dubacek and Christy
exactly.
on there, right, a link right to their
doesn't
email.
Doesn't have to
that's,
be a big production.
That's
Inland
been
does
a,
that.
Right,
how many times
do
you call Matt?
Yeah, that's been a long-term
Inland.
Goal. It's just staffing-wise to put it together. We had that done for the retail coach, did that for the Southside Properties. Yeah. But that's something that we can do internally. It just takes some, you know, a little time for us to...
Right, along with, you know, your idea about, it sounds like a big project, when you get all the, you know, when we get all the information from the comprehensive plan. It's a great idea. I just don't think it needs to be such a big production.
But I think having the link to click is the key, because people nowadays, it's
right.
everyone's time is money, and if they can shoot off an email really quick, and it can come to someone they want to deal with, and you can send an email back, and these are the types of things we offer, and these are projects we've incentivized, just something, you know, even a factory stock response.
I know when EDC was still going, you know, I always wondered, I know people in this area know Lynn, and they were talking about hiring her replacement at the time, and I always wondered that when she actually leaves and doesn't do it, and this new person, how do people get to know that new person to go in and use that person for this kind of stuff? And that's what I always wondered, how you do that.
I think she needs to be publicized on our website as a contact, which is something that we can do, I think, pretty easily.
Yeah.
Christy, how's our GIS? I know everything is outsourced through EEI right now, but do we have the ability with, I know there are other municipalities that do this, where they partner either with Ezra and Google Maps, where they do a composite overlay to where you can have comprehensive information, current zoning.
I'm glad you asked. EEI just hired, before they had a CAD operator doing a lot of their GIS work. Well, they just hired a intern, or actually a staff worker, who specializes in GIS. So actually this week we're going through and we're creating maps, but we're also, our focus is going to be toward the middle to the end of the year, is creating a storyboard for the city that would help economic development. And what a storyboard is, it's almost like Google Earth, where you click on certain properties, you have an aerial map, you click on certain properties and information comes up, and it can tell you information of if there's event happening at that location, when and where, and it'll click you to another link. They'll give you, you know, information. It can tell you if the site is available, and it'll link you to the zoning map. So that's something that actually we're going to be working on the remainder of this year to get that out, and that would be a great tool to link up with our available sites. And it's less work for staff, so we'll have identified these sites and have them create this storyboard.
With that, would it be possible, I know in the past, on our prior GIS, there was an extensive database linked to it. They had annexation agreements and the entitlement for the property. So it was actually through Google Earth. There was a KML file you could download, put in Google Earth, and then click on the property, tells you current zoning when it was annexed, and had the link to the document. Is that kind of information something...
The only problem with that is we were trying to link our GIS up to our building code information so that we can, you know, have a collaborative system. We found out that our last update was in 2009, the county information. Well, the county has changed a lot of parcel information. So parcel numbers that started with 02 that we have in our system now begin with 05 in the county. So the information is not meshing up. So in order for that to happen, we would have to...
It'd be a start from scratch.
Yeah, it would be a re-architecturing of our system. Mm. Now, EEI can do it from there in and just current data going forward. I don't know how much time it would be for the merge. We would have to probably do a separate cost estimate for that.
Right. Something to think about. Right. Yeah. In terms of facilitating developers looking at parcels. And
helping staff.
Yeah, instead of staff having to produce all the documents for them, it's a easy way to see the parcel and see what's attached to it.
Okay. All right. Did you get what you need? Okay.
Thank you.
Go on to the next item, to EDC 2015-43, the Build to Program.
Okay, so we began to touch on this the last time we talked about extending the BUILD program back in November. This is just specifically related to a new incentive program, which staff is terming as BUILD 2, the TOO standing for Townhome Owner Occupied. I go into a little bit of information about the name. I know there was a conversation about what should we call this this project to distinguish it from BUILD, but still relay what the project is providing, and staff, you know, kind of standing by that BUILD too, that it identifies that the project is related to the way the framework of the original BUILD is, but it's more for attached homes, and it would include duplexes. As of yet, we aren't seeing any market trends that are saying duplexes are coming back, but we are seeing trends that are saying townhomes are more marketable now, and that goes along with the Lakota's comprehensive plan that shows that townhomes and some of our developments that stalled would be coming back online within the next, you know, couple of years. Build 2 would work the same way as Build, except the incentive would be only $5,000 or up to $5,000. So that match would be $2,500 from the city, $2,500 from the participant developer or builder, so a total of $5,000 cash incentive. There was also discussion or a request on staff's end to look at maybe a tiered incentive, where based upon the valuation of the home, you get more of an incentive. That harkened back to the Build program. So it wasn't necessarily just for the Build 2, but it was more for the Build program. And staff looked at that, and we found that to institute a tiered program kind of be counterintuitive to what the original Build program was. And it, first of all, it was a rebate of the building permit fee. So it had nothing to do with the value of the home, just the building permit fee. The second one is the ease and timeliness of the return to the end user, which is the buyer. If they have to wait till we confirm what the value of the home was versus the construction value, just the ease of the program is not going to be there. And then finally, which is one of the bigger points, is that if we do it on a tiered system and we highly incentivize those that are building more expensive homes, we're kind of pulling the program away from those who have been using it, which it's been for one, the new home buyer or the mid-level move-up buyer, and not for the buyer that's, you know, building a $400,000, $300,000 home. They're usually within that $200,000 to $300,000 range. So we would be basically taking the program from the individuals who are utilizing the program most. And the main point is to increase rooftop. So we're not looking at, we only want higher end homes, and the home values are increasing just as the product is increasing. So that's intuitive in it. And that's staff's position on that. We did look at the incentive programs that Alderman Funkhauser gave to us. Some are very interesting. You know, the vacants to value was more of a program that they wanted to get rid of these vacant lots and turn them into homes, but that program was pretty much funded by the city, and it was lots that were owned by the city. So the city went in and purchased these vacant homes and vacant lots, and then they resold them for a different program. And I didn't think the city wanted to become a developer in that sense, or a landowner. And then there was the residential demolition, which is kind of they would incentivize you if you had an older home, you tore it down, you built a more valuable home. That was more to broaden the tax base, get more tax base money. And then the higher value incentive was kind of similar to that. So staff is still recommending that we look at doing the Build 2 program, the townhome owner occupied, at the same way that we've done run the Build program, and we're looking at probably doing it for a year to see, or whatever time frame you see fit, to see how it would work out.
Okay.
So it's okay. Can you put that in the notes somehow?
Yeah. So it's okay.
Fart
to
sound,
incentivize
thumbs
for businesses,
down.
But
it's a
not
raspberry.
For
the raspberry.
Right. For residents.
What's that?
It's okay to incentivize for businesses, but not for residents.
You know what I've always thought about the Build program.
Well, I know, but we use tax money to pay these incentives,
right,
too.
I'm perfectly fine incentivizing for businesses and not residents. You can put that in the notes. You're absolutely right.
Do we have any issue with this? It's a owner-occupied incentive program. Mm-hmm. Are there any legal ramifications of making it a mandatory one-year owner-occupied versus rental? If somebody wanted to rent, is there any statutes or any problems that we could have
by requiring that?
By requiring owner-occupied versus rental? Because I know that is always a touchy subject, mm-hmm. whether it's going to be a, is it a rental development? Is it a owner?
I had to reinforce that. We give the person the check. A month later, they move out and rent it out.
And I know it says that it'll be checked by the bills, but...
Right.
Yeah, but now what?
The
Let's
owner
say we find
could,
out they moved out.
What
now
are you
going
to
do?
Right, what
the
are you
owner
do?
Can keep
be
the
a business
bills
decision
in their
to
name.
Try to sue.
Yeah.
Well, no,
let's start suing our own residents.
I don't know. Could we
but you
mean?
See what I'm looking at here is...
price back? I don't know.
Not just making sure that it's enforced, but legally... Do we have the ability to mandate a owner-occupied?
Kathy didn't have a problem with it.
She didn't have an issue with it.
So.
Okay. And then enforcement becomes...
The real question is enforcement.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what are you going to do about it if they
right. move
out? Nothing.
Nothing.
Well, even if they move out, they start renting it, they keep the utilities in their name, we're going to verify the utilities.
No, let's say they don't keep their utilities.
Yeah, I don't have to do that.
Right. Let's say they send us a note that said, by the way, suckers, I moved out last week and rented it out. What are you going to do about it? And the answer, very likely, will be absolutely nothing.
I mean, it's the same way with the bill program. Somebody can... come in, get the check for $10,000, and turn around and put it on the market for rent.
Right.
Yep.
And so, if on a 6-unit townhome, the developer or builder has a single contract signed.
And
that individual, that first contract, will receive it. Any other owners, and once they sell those will be qualified to have the same incentive. The developer or builder cannot do it.
Correct.
It has to be a signed contract in order to qualify for that.
Yeah, but with the rental thing, it's the same way with all the developments that came in, and they said, oh, there's only going to be a certain amount for rentals, and it didn't turn out that way, but there's nothing you could do about it. It's not anything you can...
Well, I mean, I don't like the build program in either manifestation, whether single family or townhome. But frankly, I mean, if I'm going to incentivize anything, it's going to be a single-family house over a townhouse.
I kind of lean that way, too.
So, I mean, if you're going to come into Yorkville and spend your money and build something, I would rather you build a single-family house than a townhome. I mean, so not only am I against a build, I guess build, too. Get it? Yeah. Also? Anyway. build, too, I guess. So I wouldn't support it, but I don't think that's a surprise to anybody, so I'll let you guys talk.
But I will say, the one thing is we do have several developments that are townhomes that are pending the potential for growth. And we could sit on them. We have seen one development convert the townhomes to single family. That was the Autumn Creek. That was a major change. That was actually good because there was an absorption rate that they clearly picked up on. There's a little shift in that, obviously, right now, two times. And that's been cyclic. We had that, 4 years ago. We had more demand for rental and low-end townhomes being purchased, and it shifted to single-family. Now we're seeing a slight swing back around to that for various reasons. But it's a tough one to say if we want to incentivize it. I don't have a huge issue with it in terms of incentivizing the townhomes. I think it would be good to have some movement on them. It shows more diversity. I don't remember our statistics on how many townhomes we have percentage-wise in the city right now. I know we talked about that several months ago in the breakdown.
A breakdown of
what we had in the total housing market. But I know we're not close to what would be overwhelming for townhome base. But I wouldn't mind seeing some new townhomes. At least it expands our residential base.
So in build two, is that going to take the water and sewer fees to get also like build program does?
So the breakdown is in the memo. However, which way we can get there, and the four categories would be water connection fee, city sewer, building permit fee, and public works.
The only benefit is since it's half the dollar amount of the build program, it is most likely that the water connection fee would be the only one impacted, and it wouldn't even take it 100% of the way.
Correct.
Now, of the subdivisions, though, that I could see developing, Grand Reserve probably being one of the first ones that has a lot of townhomes in it, their water connection fee is zero, so it would go straight to the sewer connection fee after that.
Also, remember, too, that any multifamily homes require to have a sprinkler system, so that'd mean, at the very least, an additional water service. So each, if you had a sixplex, as Chris was saying, that'd be six water service connection fees they'd be paying. So each unit pays its own. You can't bring one water service in and feed all the units. Each unit is considered as independent. And the same thing, the sprinkler system would be a separate tap on. So for a sixplex, you're looking at it.
So that's these numbers times six. You're saying.
Yeah. So we would not be charging one tap on fee for the entire thing. Each unit would have its own individual tap, which would be its own individual fee.
So if on that six unit.
Which helps
if
pay
you ended up only having one that qualified for the build two, those other five do pay the tap on it.
More
or if it's all six of them, Well, you're waiving that.
But it's not like you're cutting one tap on 36 ways.
You'd have your seventh also for the sprinkler system. Yeah.
Right.
So you have your seventh, which would be a 2-inch, which would be a more expensive tap on fee for the sprinkler system.
But that one is spread across all six units in this instance. So we're not negating all of
it. It's a side question. In units like that, is each sprinkler system individual for the unit, or is.
Yes.
I assume, correct?
Yes. Okay. They can bring in one service to feed the whole thing, but it has to be. Basically, one service would come into an outside utility room that's a heated area, and from there it would branch off underground to the intended unit. There'd be no control by anybody besides a company that was there to monitor that. Because every unit has to be monitored. So basically, it would come into one centralized area, then it would distribute from there.
So you one goes off, it's not going off in the other five.
Unless
there's
it triggers.
Right.
Or unless if it was built in the mid-1990s in New York, and then there are.
Then they all go.
Yeah, then we have those that are... Yeah. Fully connected.
Well, there's 4-hour firewalls in between every unit. Effectively, would stop an entire structure fire. You can see them sometimes on the internet. You see 6 blacks and one unit is just gone. You look inside, you don't see the dense glass, and the middle unit will burn all the way out, and there's nothing there, and it won't even have, the neighbors might not even know what happened.
So on the program, we have no limit on quantity, but we are proposing a 1-year term.
Staff left that up to the EDC. I know when we first did the build program, it was a limit of 30 permits, 6 months.
Or six months.
And right. Then we extended it to 60 for another 6 months, and then we unleashed the cap. So it's so to the direction of the EDC.
How many total platted units do we have?
Chris is pulling that up. But I pulled up 5 of the most likely to start.
These ones are ready to go. They have
ready to go.
Yeah. Final planning.
Bristol Bay has 60 townhome units. Grand Reserve has 74. Raintree has 108. And Fox Hill, Unit 7, which is at Timber Glen, has about 48 townhomes.
Would. Okay, so a developer comes in. They take a 6-unit building. They take one for spec model. They pull in a. Would they qualify for an incentive on that as a townhome or no?
No. Specs are the Renew program is single family, and the catch with Renew is if you use Renew, you cannot use Build. So you can't do both.
But they're different purchasers. If the builder, the developer, takes one and has a contract on the second unit, they still cannot. If we, assuming that we would allow multifamily on Renew. Make that assumption. Would that be possible that the developer could?
No, because it's on the property.
We'd have to change the Renew program language substantially to allow that.
And even if we did, you still can't double dip on that property. So it's per the property, not who the owner is. So
I'm trying to convince him to vote no.
Still put some guarantees in there. Undiscussed, very important part of this conversation was the actual name of the program. We did recommend to leave it at Build 2, and I put the city's finest creative minds on trying to come up with a name. That would be Alderman Frieder's.
I went through a whole bunch. I even, there's a program that you can go to that generates acronyms. And
I was trying to recreate. Him and I had actually created a vocabulary or an alphabet of different words. Just couldn't come up with anything that was even remotely close or good.
And I'm glad at least you used the proper form of two. So thank you for the proper.
You're
grammar.
Welcome.
Minor victories.
Is it going to have the same logo as the build, the construction?
I think we'd tweak it, do something a little different. Kind of like
you're assuming there's going to be a program, Alderman.
I'm just stepping outside of the discussion here.
The O's would be attached. A duplo. So do we have a feel of how we're going to move forward?
I'm fine with this. I think it's a good idea. I like it.
So you'd want to do what, take it to council?
Oh, we would have to. It would be an ordinance.
Or we could just kill it right here in committee.
True.
Got 2-2 wouldn't kill it, would it?
Doesn't has to admit, does it?
If it's 2-2, it stalemate.
But now, we can have our mayor put it on.
Sure, absolutely.
I'd be willing to take it to council for discussion.
Yeah, we're going to do that, and then we'll vote there. It's on the same here.
You still say no. I mean,
if mayor wants it, he can have it. I mean, I'm voting no, so I mean, it's up to you guys.
I'd say
vote. That's there's takes it there, there and then. I think it should have been on no consent, that's for sure.
And if you were for just.
And staff was planning on the 26th so that we can create an ordinance.
So then your time, your scheduling for this would be, are you going to put it on the same schedule as the bill? So the bill has up to December, right?
Yes, December 31st.
All right, other discussion. Okay. Here. All right. Item number three, EDC 2015-47, noise ordinance discussion.
Okay. About a year or so ago, we updated the noise ordinance, and we tried to encompass not only sound time frames for sound when we increase those, but just indoor and outdoor sound. Maximums, and we came across with issues going on with the bowling alley is that maybe it's not necessarily a decibel level issue, it might be a vibration issue. So we looked at contacting a professional sound engineer, a couple of them actually, to get their take on what we would need to do to try to address vibration in our ordinance. And the recommendations from the couple that I talked to were let's go site specific. Go out to the site in the evening when they're having these events, and then see if it necessarily is a decibel issue or if it is a vibration issue. So first, define what the problem is. Then the second step would then be to look at our ordinance holistically and see if the changes that we made are effective. Can they be bolstered in some way, or should they be changed or revamped in some way? And then the last step is to look at the equipment that we use. There's equipment that we have that could possibly be outdated, not catching some of the information, or just and how we're tuning it. They can read dBAs and dBs, and we need to know if the equipment that we're using is actually benefiting us by giving us the readings that we need to enforce our ordinances. So out of the few that I contacted, I believe that Soundscape, which is the company that I put their proposal in the packet, was a lot more comprehensive. They dealt with this issue in a very amount of communities, the city of Chicago being one, and they are going to, in their scope of services, address all of the three things that I told you about and issue us a written report and answer any questions. So if you feel that we need to go to that next step to look at our ordinance again, go out and have a professional sound engineer do a reading of the site at one of its peak times, and then give us a written report and also tell us about our equipment, then I'm looking for your guidance to move forward in that direction.
So just as a little recap, the most recent time that the police visited Pinheads that resulted in a ticket, it was actually drafted as a disorderly conduct ticket because they went out to the complainant's property, took the noise reading, and the decibels came up at like 40-something, and our limit is 55. So they were far below the decibel level. But the officers in the house said it was, they could feel the vibration in the house and said that it was bad enough that they felt that they still had to write a ticket. Not to mention when they had addressed it with the management kind of had an argument with the police officers and ran away from them and didn't necessarily comply right away, which is something that I know that the police have addressed with the management company there. So so that was the reason why we had looked at it. Is we think that our enforcement level of that particular issue has been appropriate, and we think that the ordinance is probably appropriate as drafted, but there still is an issue there that you know, I see as a nuisance. So, you know, the company that we're recommending has done a similar type of study in East Dundee, where Kathy works also. And they had told us that their recommendation was more of just total decibels, so it was a very loud bar. But they had went out, done all the recommendations, you know, visited the site, took some observations, and the solution that they had there was actually, and it was like a consent agreement between the bar and the city, they just put a giant flashing light inside the bar. And when it went above a certain decibel level, the light goes off, and the management knows that the police are going to be on their way if they don't turn it down. And so they said that that's actually been very successful. So I kind of thought that was like a funny, very simple and practical way that, you know, they threw a little bit of money at it, you know, looked at it, got the bar owner to buy in, and then they came up with a solution that probably saves them a whole bunch of headaches and police response time. So $4,000, as long as nobody has an objection, that's our recommendation to just go do it, get it done correctly. And the recommendation may be that there's nothing we can do except to go out there and keep finding them. But at least then we know that we've exhausted all options.
Well, doesn't it seems like it's a vibration issue, not a noise.
Yes.
So would that work for the vibration then too?
Yeah, they'll be able to study low frequency noise. Okay. So, and it may be a combination of both, like Christy said, or it may just be simply vibration. And we do have vibration performance standards in our zoning codes that we've enforced against other developments, but we don't really have a nice, accurate, scientific way to measure that, know what the issues are, and then to have that hold up in a court.
Gotcha.
I don't have an issue running through with this. I noticed that they have a Chicago and a Michigan office. Mm-hmm. They have additional expenses on here that we could have. I'd like to take out airfare. If they have a Chicago office, I don't want to spring at somebody. I know those are always in there, and we always pay for printing and the, you know, usage of equipment. That's fine. I don't have any, but I don't want to pay for airfare. $4,000 is enough.
What? Yeah, I'm okay with spending the $4,000. That's an issue that's not going to go away by ignoring it.
No,
I agree. And I hope that, okay, they come out and do the study. Would they be able to give us some ideas on how to rectify it if we do have a problem?
Well, that's the whole point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I don't want to come out and say, okay, the base is going to, and there's no solution.
For $4,000, I can tell you there's too much base.
Yeah, I'm getting that.
Yeah, that's true. That's the written assessment and recommendations.
So they're going to give us a written report. It's not going to be verbal. Yeah. It's going to be a written report that we can provide.
So things that could be done to mitigate.
Exactly.
The bar owner, too, has been fairly responsive post this last ticket, in that they had hired a sound engineer to go out and do almost the exact same things. So my guess is that when they see us doing it, they'll probably piggyback with their own sound engineer and say, okay, maybe there's some tweaks we can make inside the building, and hopefully that'll improve the surrounding properties, too.
Because, I mean, they do a lot of business there. I mean,
yes,
it's...
Yeah, it's a popular place.
Yeah, it's, and it's, you know, the same owners as the Roadhouse over by us.
The same owners as what?
Roadhouse.
The one down by us. We're in the.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's the same owners. And they're going to be doing bands in a week.
They're going to do what?
Starting bands, I think. Pretty soon you're going to hear
the Roadhouse?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've had bands.
But it's a masonry building.
Right, I'm guessing that one's
a
farther
away. And the nearest resident is a good distance away from that one.
Yeah, I don't think we'll have the same issues there.
No, the nearest residence from that is a pretty good distance.
Okay. Any additional business?
Yes, one item. I wanted to put on the record, last meeting we had about lot coverage, there was an misidentification of the site. It was not the expat site. It was actually the Bank of the Corner, as Alderman Funkhauser had identified correctly. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Excellent. And tomorrow is the meeting for the
correct.
The big project over on
Walnut.
Correct.
I did go visit. Actually, went today. When I
the
she
facility?
Half of it is blocked by commercial buildings. So, and then the other half, basically half the L and the long L, is all apartments. And they're 2 and 3 flat. It does stick out. I mean, it's high, but it's also long when you look at it in the street. I went through the inside, too, and the other one thing I did, because I had concerns about what if this got halfway filled and stalled. She has a waiting list that goes back to 2014 to get in there. It's full. She has people from Aurora and Rockford and Oswego that are on her waiting list. Mm. And so they share that waiting list. They also have the management company also manages one in Lyle and manages one in Oswego. The Oswego one's a residential unit facility. But she said that there'd probably be people on her list that would come here directly if we did it, just right. To let you know that.
Yeah, I never had a concern about them filling it. I think the need is there that if we built it,
because their presentation made it seem like there's enough people right in this town now that would fill it. And I don't know if I believe that necessarily, that, you know, you're talking about a lot of people selling their homes, 160 people, 80 homes going for sale and moving there. She did tell me that, I asked her how that works with the income, because, you know, it wouldn't be, she said some people still work, and I'm like, well, how do you have people working, and especially if they're on Social Security, too, that they're not breaking that ceiling, and she goes, there's things that people do that can put their income down to get in. Once you get in there, you're in.
You don't have to have
you could hit the lotto on the next day, and you're golden.
Yeah, we discussed that at the meeting.
Right.
That
was
once they get in.
It's not something that every year they have to check income and verify it. It's the initial verification.
Yep.
So they decide, I'm not going to work for a year, 2 years.
Exactly.
I get in there, and then I can go back to work.
Yep.
And I pay very, very little, and it's subsidized.
So she did tell me that. As she said it, they filled it up. They had 100 units, 100 people, I guess, before they even had the building finished. So.
Yeah, my concern has never been occupancy. I think that if we build it, it sounds like Field of Dreams, that they will come, but.
It may not be all from your field, like, but the surrounding areas, but that's
right.
What it is.
So I asked her about, well, if you sold your home, does that affect you? She said of a 0.2%, there's a 0.2% or something that. It gets if you sold your house and you didn't own any money on it, that would factor into it. But she goes, that doesn't usually break you on it. Or in retirements, I guess retirements don't either then.
Yeah, I talked to the St. Pat's Church across the street, the business manager and the priest, and they, the guy was here. He was saying how much Father Matt was in favor of it, and they're not against it, but they're not really. They're basically taking a very neutral position. And she asked me to relay this to everybody. Sue, who's the business manager, their position basically is: yes, it would be nice, to have all these senior citizens across the street from our church, because a certain percentage will then attend our church, and it's good for the church business. They're not concerned about the height. They are concerned about the neighbors. They brought up the Moes and everybody else along the way. And they were asked by the developer to go to the zoning board on behalf of the church and speak in favor of it, but they're not willing to go that far. So they're okay with it as long as the neighbors are okay with it, but they're not going to go out there and publicly endorse, but they're also not going to object either. So that's kind of the St. Pat's position, which is obviously across the street. And interestingly, she told me that the Moles informed her that the developer had offered to put him on city well, take him off the city well and put him on
the sewer utilities.
And put him on public utilities.
Yes.
So I'm glad they're trying to work with the homeowners. And frankly, if the homeowners take the offer, I see that as them.
Endorsing
the project. It's not going to be, yes, give me city water and city sewer, but I still object to the project. I mean, you either have to...
Yeah, that concern has been the neighbors.
That's my biggest concern. For the rest of it, with the Tom Homes, and because there's the buildings there, it's the R1 smack dab against the R4. That's the big concern. So if the R1s stop complaining, I think I'd be much more open to it. So
I mentioned to her that where that unit is in Glendale Heights, it's in a retention area, wet area where they pulled the water. And she goes, that's the only reason it's four stories there. She goes, they have put buildings where they've actually put the parking below ground, and then you're only talking about a 3-flat.
But that's a lot of money.
Well, I'm just saying it has been done. She said in the past, she told me that. She goes, there's some that have parkings down a level, and then you're only 3 stories high. just she goes, I won't tell you that doesn't happen in some places.
Right.
And then she also told me that it passed the first round. Yes. Is that what you guys heard?
Yes.
Okay. No, that's the first I heard.
State, yeah.
That was like first of the year here, right?
Well, I didn't think we'd get tomorrow's meeting. If it didn't pass the first round, I think they would have pulled it.
Well, I didn't yeah. know.
Yeah, so that's good to know.
All right. Okay, you need a turn.
Thank you.